Red Cow Arcade.
Do antibiotics give you diarrhea?
Yeah, they do, I think. Yeah.
I see. So I got like some kind of COVID resurgence without actually testing positive, but I'm pretty convinced it's COVID because it just has that je ne sais quoi. It's got that same fatigue. It was like half. It started about like 12 days ago, and it really, I still am a bit congested and I'm tired and I'm having problems. And so Nina was like, you know, that's too many days. So she arranged for me to have an antibiotic, and I took it like a few hours ago, and I've got a rumbly in my tumbly.
I believe so. I mean, I'm not an expert, but I believe that it is a side effect.
I think I've emptied my guts in preparation for this podcast. I'm ready to talk. Okay.
Great.
But you got COVID too?
I got COVID. So we can have like another thumbnail, and it'll be my face being like, I got COVID. No, but it's actually not that interesting of a story because I got it. Well, I was putting my kids to bed and I was just like freaking exhausted, which is like normal. So I was like, okay, nothing's really that crazy. So like after I put them to bed, I was like just knocked out, tired. But the next day I was like, I woke up, I had a fever. I was like, oh, that's kind of strange. But I didn't have any other symptoms. No respiratory symptoms. I had a slight cough. Headache, maybe. No cough.
No sore throat? Because the sore throat was really killer for
me. No sore throat. If you, like, it's totally unlike what people were having of COVID when it first started. And so I was like, I don't even know what this is. So I just thought it was just like, I don't know, a little something. And went about my day, just did a whole day of work. went to meetings, like Zoom meetings.
Yeah.
And but then I like when it got to like 6 o'clock, like 6 PM, I was like, I have to go to bed for the day. And so I like slept for 12 hours. 12 hours straight. And luckily my wife was very kind to put the kids to bed, but and then I woke up, I was like, maybe I should take one of those COVID tests just to see, you know, I don't know. And I took it, and I was positive, and I was like, okay. But I was still kind of sleepy, so I just took the day off from work. I was like, fuck it. And so...
Did the family ever get it?
No, they didn't get anything. They didn't get anything at all. It was just me, the only one who's vaccinated in this family.
Yeah, Nina and Gloria didn't get any symptoms this time around. It was 6 weeks after the first bout of it, and I never tested positive. I tested 3 times, so maybe it was just some other cold that they didn't get. But one theory would be COVID rebound from taking the Paxlovid the first time, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know, because Fauci got that Paxlovid rebound too. So
was he public about that?
Yeah, there was an interview. I saw it. He was just like, they took the Paxlovid a couple weeks later. I got more COVID. It was worse. I was like, oh, okay.
So is he saying don't take it?
No, he's just saying that's what happened.
If you take it, you will get the COVID twice.
But it's like really rare, but I got it.
It's one in the trillion.
I think they're saying like 5%, but it seems like more than that because everybody I know who got it has rebounded. So.
Oh, my God.
I think it's more than that.
Well, but we went to... Oh, yeah,
so sorry, it was a fine COVID. I actually recommend it to everybody. No, I'm just kidding. But it was basically like me like napping and then writing. I wrote the Samsung TV review while I was COVID.
Yeah.
So it was actually pretty creative COVID time. I wrote the NES script. So the NES script is all written. So I just have to film it. So yeah, I actually kind of liked having a little bit of COVID, a touch of COVID.
So you wrote the Samsung video like last week and then just, you must've shot it really quick then.
Yeah. And I was still recovering, I think. Cause like I did the voiceover and it took like, you know, it takes like 20 minutes to do the voiceover. And, I was just like, after I did it, I was like, I am very like fatigued just by using my voice. Like it's kind of crazy how much fatigue you get. That was my only symptom, really, was fatigue.
That's what happened to me too. I took like a day off, and then there was this one day I was supposed to be on site. I said no, you don't want me there. But I was scheduled to run a focus group with like 20 people. So, you know, like asking questions about like their satisfaction with this thing or that thing. which I've never done before. It was something I volunteered to do. It was 90 minutes and it was like a captive audience of important people. And I was just like maintaining. It was like I was on shrooms and I just had to like get through it. And I think I did people later told me like, I had no idea you were sick during all that. But I remember as soon as we closed out of the Zoom, I just like whipped my like professional gear off, got in bed. It was like, yeah, like I remember like later in the day, I tried to do like a small task and it like I got like halfway through a small task and was like, I gotta lay down again.
Yeah, I think there must be like a million different strains going around because I must have got a really weak strain because I've had colds worse than that.
Yeah.
And so it's just what a mystery this. And you know what? It felt synthetic. Did you think that? Because like. It felt like I took a drug. Like I took, because I've been on like muscle relaxers, which make you like just like feel like you're melting and stuff like that. It felt like artificial, like that.
Interesting.
It was very. I've never felt anything quite like it.
I mean, the throat symptoms were just so painful that's all I can really remember. I mean, yeah, I suppose the fatigue was sort of that way, but the congestion and. Yeah, Nina thinks I now have a bacterial infection, and that's what's like carrying on here. Because I went on site yesterday for the first time in a while, and like, oh man, it's so. I did not want to be there. I had to go in because there was a guy who was leaving, and he did a great job, and I had to like see him off. I can't like just like skip out, and everybody wanted me. Then they kind of guilted me. They're like, and we will see you tomorrow, right? And then I was like, yeah, I guess. And I go and I go in. And then they hear me hacking up a lung, which is like, you know, really disconcerting. Yeah. They were like, what? Are you okay?
Peer pressured you in, why are you here?
It's so shitty. There's so many things like that where it's like, yeah, it happens with content. It happens with like other work where there's like all this pressure to like perform, perform, perform. And then when you try to live up to it, they're like, man, you're a workaholic. Like I was just trying to meet your expectations.
Why don't you take a day off? Why didn't you take a vacation?
Yeah. You know, you're no hero for coming in. Like, I do not want to be here. Fuck this place. I don't want to be dry coughing like throughout the hallways. And yeah, like it reminds me of like, you know, the guy who, if you have like three sneezes in the row, he's like, bless you. Bless you. Bless you again. And if you have like a coughing fit and you're like, I can't carry on the conversation we were having now. And then they're like, yeah, they'll ask if you're okay. I'm like, clearly not. But also like, are you going to send me home on like a 60 mile bus trip right at this moment? Like we're stuck here together. I'm sorry. You're getting this thing, whatever I got. I know.
It, like since COVID, it definitely makes me very self-conscious to even like clear your throat minorly. So you got to like come up with strategies to be like,
you heard the joke of like, it used to be you would cough to cover a fart. Now you fart to cover a cough.
Yes, that's perfect. That's perfect.
But we were thinking like we should take Gloria somewhere this summer because we rarely really do like a, I don't know about you, but like, it's not too often we do a week or 2 weeks off, but we can do weekends. You know, we can like schedule something on a Friday because Nina has to get a lot, you know, she has patients. She has to get a lot of advance notice. And for me, I can actually get time off pretty easily. It's just that because of the virtual nature of my work, if I take a day off on a day that everybody else is working, it's inevitable that I'm going to get kind of, you know, a good quick question, you know, that sort of stuff will kind of happen all day. I could turn it off, but then like, it sort of just all gets constipated and worse the next day. Even if I did ignore it, it's still a source of anxiety that things are piling up and stuff. So it's always better to, if I can like take some relaxation time on, certainly on like 3 day weekends and that kind of thing. So we said, where should we take Gloria? And we decided on Great Wolf Lodge again. And there was a Box Mac episode where I told a funny story about this like water slide where you go into like a chamber and it just like drops your ass like vertically. Right. And I didn't do that this time around because she wasn't up for quite as much water stuff. But what we did do that we didn't do last time was Magic Quest. And I think I just mentioned it on Box Mac, but here's what it is, EJ. So first of all, the Great Wolf Lodge compound is, you know, it's just a giant hotel, but it's got like a Chuck E. Cheese inside of it, you know, like of an arcade of that quality, maybe probably bigger, really. It's probably like two Chuck E. Cheeses. You know, it's got a Rabbids roller coaster. It's got a VR thing. It's got, you know, everything, you know, a ball pit. It's got everything you'd expect. It's got an animatronics show that is happening kind of around the clock, including like they'll do a bedtime story. It's got a buffet. It's got one Dunkin' Donuts. This is worth mentioning. That Dunkin' Donuts is the only thing food related open in the entire building until 11 o'clock.
Oh, interesting.
And people just bum rush this thing.
Oh, yeah.
To use a Thor Love and Thunder term. let's rush his bum. fuck Dunkin' Donuts, dude. Like, I know, like, some people enjoy the coffee or whatever. There's, like, nothing. As a non-coffee drinker, there's, like, nothing there for me. They don't even have chocolate chip cookies. They have, like...
Yeah, the food is, like, plastic. It's not great.
So,
as somebody who enjoys coffee, it's fine, but yeah.
Yeah, they have like, you know, like the cake batter latte or whatever. So anyway, and then over by where the actual hotel rooms are, the hotel rooms themselves have like a cool like treehouse bunk bed. And the hotels are around a perimeter that's this two floor, like more arcade games. But these are more like physical. Like there's a rock wall. There's one that's like they put you in a harness and you can like walk across like wobbly shit. And I actually did that with Gloria. They were like, yeah, she can go up there as long as you're up there with her. And it was one of those things where we got through like two of the obstacles and she got horrified. And I can't really describe like just how, even though you're harnessed in, getting her to walk across things that she's scared of that high up, you know, like 20 feet up, was like, why am I up here?
It's like, you don't need to be doing Nickelodeon guts up here.
yeah. Why am I doing this?
Do you have it? Not Gloria.
But Magic Quest is you buy a $40 wand. You got to buy it. You don't rent the wand.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And it's like an infrared sensor. You know, and you buy a top for it, too. That's a flashlight and you get your own color. And while you're there, maybe you buy a hat. Maybe you buy a thing, you know, like they get you, they get you all over head to toe. And I saw all these families with like 5-6 kids and they didn't look to me like high rollers. I was like, I don't know how you afford massive. You
dumped like $200 on whatever this is
for this. Just this. Yeah. I mean, the most. The most value is in the water park because for whatever it is, $300 a night, at least for a room our size, you get the water park for as long as it's open. So if you could somehow stay in the water park the whole time and you loved that, that would be good. So you buy the wand and you buy game time. You buy like unlimited game time, whatever that is. And it's just LCD monitors and other infrared sensors throughout the complex. And you walk up to them. They're called like portals. Some of them are, you know, like on rocks. I hear there's like a Harry Potter thing that's like this. This is a kind of a ripoff of a Harry Potter thing. Right. It's just LCD. Something. It's just LCD monitors that you wave the wand at it and it wakes up and it plays a little animation and tells you to like, it gives you a quest. They're like, young Magi. they say that the next ingredient for the magic potion is white hot magma. And then like it fades out. You know, make haste, young Magi. and you just walk back and forth across the water park area into the, you know, the gift shop and back and forth and through the obstacle course, just waving your magic wand at shit that it told you to wave your magic wand at.
I see.
It's all it is.
Did Glory enjoy it?
Fucking loved it. And it was
they
so
know what they're
exhausting.
Doing over there.
Oh my God. Well, especially because they break it into quests. They're like, all right, you're on quest one where you got to find the five crystals. Now there's a purple, a green, a yellow. And you know, and so you're like, and they give you a map. So you and your wife are both looking at this stupid map going like, where is the crystal palaces? And you keep forgetting where the crystal palaces are. And they're like, oh, it's in that same stupid spot that we keep walking in. And so, like, you know, it was the one time I've ever wanted a pedometer to be like, how many times have we walked up and down this hallway? Some of the stuff is in pretty close proximity to each other. But some of it is just on the other end of the entire building. And Gloria's like, let's go. And, you know, she's small and can run in between people and stuff.
Well, if you have, doesn't your like iPhone, like even just have like a simple like pedometer, like you took 17 million steps.
Oh, yeah. Today. Doesn't it track that no matter what?
Yeah. So if you go to like the health monitor, it should tell
you. Maybe we can figure it out live. That'd be fun.
It's like the little symbol of the heart and it should show you.
Yeah.
Like,
all right. I got it.
Per day.
Don't share my data with Apple. So show all health data. So I'm going to pick the day. This is going to be fascinating for everybody.
Yeah, it's cool.
How do I actually pick the day?
Yeah, I don't know. I think
a week.
Yeah, you go by week, maybe.
July 15th. Oh, okay. Huh? It's actually not that good. it's got nothing compared to you know, my regular workout weeks.
Yeah.
So never mind. It's like 10,633. No. You know, but like the day before for a Friday, it was like 15,000.
Yeah.
So never mind. Anyway, magic. She got and actually the wand saves your progress. And so we went to bed the night before we were going to leave, and we didn't think she would be like, oh, no, I still have to fight the Goblin King. And sure enough, she woke up at like 7 a.m. and was like, we got to fight the Goblin King.
It's like, obviously, it's like a semi-itinerary.
Because once you collect everything, you can go up to like one of their primary TVs and you have a little kind of turntable RPG fight with, you know, really. Yeah, you there's like a touchscreen and there's wand motions. And that's how you can kill the Goblin King. And I did it. She didn't, you know, she was like, you got to do it. And I was like, do you want to fight him? She's like, no.
And, not the Goblin King.
Not the fucking Goblin King. Oh, yeah. You got to get like a password because there's like a guard, you know, there's bad acting where like if you have a limited time to unlock the thing and he's, you know, otherwise he's like, scram, Magi, the Goblin King won't be seeing you today. But I thought we were satisfied and we started like packing up from the hotel. And then she turned around and saw that you can also fight a dragon. But to fight the dragon, you have to go through like a day's worth of activities.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, well, I'm not doing it. And then she was like, all I want to do is fight that dragon. And I was like, I love my kid. And I speed run.
You did a speed run.
Magic Quest. No, I was like, I was just like, you stay here. And it was a grown man running around with a pink wand. Just waving it at TVs, collecting everything, and then we killed the dragon.
Getting your splits, streaming on Twitch.
And some douche in front of me, because there is a lot of, like, foot traffic, and so, like, you end up, like, having to wait at portals with your wand for people to finish with their bullshit. Yeah. Please, yeah. Doing this for my kid. Sure you are.
I bought the wand.
This one douche, like, he restarted the portal. And, you know, like Microsoft, you know, Windows 7, like,
run an update. Software is all sitting there
like Windows is prepping itself for you for a long time. So that was that. It was a great time. And, they've got a good system there because they're pretty good at making it so you don't have to leave. Like you can order, you know, a pizza at the pizza place. And so he's like, everybody's walking around with boxes of pizza, eating this just kind of doughy, like cardboard pizza. And yeah, she, you know, it's one of those places you get a bracelet. So the bracelet lets you into the room. The bracelet is where you can charge absolutely everything. We probably, you know, with two nights at $300 a night and then with all the accoutrements, yeah, it was probably about a $1,000 trip all told. And she was like, she wouldn't cut off her bracelet for like 2 or 3 days. She was like, it reminds me of my trip. I loved fighting the dragon. Yeah, she loved it.
Man. Hey. Yeah, we're going to go to the Cape later this year, this summer. And,
oh, nice.
The kids love that. They just love going someplace different and like screwing around. So,
yeah,
it'll be nice. And it's you know, it's our family cottage. So it's not like extra money or anything. So.
Oh, that's great. She was telling me today, she was like, I want to do something where I don't already know what it all is. And I was like, what are you talking about? And she was like every day I do a thing and I already know what it's going to be. I was like, okay.
Okay.
<All right. laughs> Try to do something real fresh for you, kid. Lately, she you know, she'll come to me with some problem. Some, you know, there was a kid that was mean to her or said something she didn't like or whatever. And I'll give her some advice on how to deal with it. I'll say, well, I would just tell them this or whatever. And she goes, I'm not going to say exactly that, Dad. I'm not going to use your fucking words.
Your words? Dumb. Dumb words.
I've got behind me on the arcade, if it's still playing, the Japanese arcade game Cheeky Boys by Capcom.
Oh, okay. And, yeah.
It was released in North America as a Genesis game. And I think as a TurboGrafx CD game, I think it was a TurboGrafx CD game. And yet the Genesis version is looks way cooler. Very colorful, like very cartoony, challenging, platforming combat adventure game. You know, with somewhat like chibi style graphics and stuff. But it's just one of those, like I heard about it on that GameSack show on YouTube. They have they do a segment called Arcade versus Console. And I was just like, how have I never heard of this Genesis game? Because it plays great. It's by Capcom. It looks like it's honestly, it looks like one of the best Genesis games I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's amazing like how many games were produced during that time that are actually still playable.
Yeah. And this is a rare situation where they took, you know, they had the arcade game is kind of challenging because you just pump quarters into it. And they kind of kept the challenge, but they added a store system. So as you collect coins, you can buy items and hearts and lives and stuff. So this is like a rare instance in the retro times where they actually like added a little bit of quality of life that you wouldn't normally expect. So if anybody's never heard of or played Cheeky Boys and you like Sega Genesis games, I would check this one out.
Yeah, it gave me like a Wonder Boy vibes when you showed me it earlier.
Yeah, for sure. Certainly the graphic style is.
Yeah, the graphic style.
And the gameplay, what would I liken it to? I don't know, probably like ActRaiser or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I picked up a little bit of that. There's that new Pokemon game that was earlier this year.
Mm.
I just started playing it. It's pretty interesting. It definitely gives you like Breath of the Wild vibes, like that's what they were going for. But it's just Pokemon, but they like kind of streamlined a ton of things, and it's pretty interesting so far. So
As the trainer and like run around, like
and it's like kind of an open worldish type thing, but it's a little different than Breath of the Wild in that, you know, I haven't gotten too far, so I can't really say a ton about it, but it's intriguing. I haven't been intrigued by a game in a while, so
yeah. It's good. Yeah. I was playing it was on sale for like $3 or something. It was, what the hell was it called? Mighty, it might even be by the people who did Mighty Number 9, you know, the kind of Mega Man rip-off.
It's by Inti Creates. I know what you're talking about. Mighty Gunvolt something.
Yes, Mighty Gunvolt. Yeah, and actually it's pretty darn fun.
Yeah, the Inti Creates, they were contracted to do Mega Man 9 and 10, if you remember, for like WiiWare.
Mm-hmm.
And so they did Mega Man 9 and 10, and I think they do these Mighty Gunvolt games.
Yeah, it was pretty good. It was like, it felt really true to, I mean, it really felt like a classic Mega Man game until something typically bullshitty would happen, and then that didn't happen.
Yeah.
You know, like, it was just a little bit more fair. Did you see this Sly Stallone thing?
There was like the weird, what was that? Like, it was like a weird painting.
Sly's being weird.
And like, it seemed like he was like talking about the rights of Rocky, and it seems spiteful.
Yes. it was kind of a boomerish move by Sly, but so as the story goes, he was, you know, back in 1975 or whatever, he was auditioning for a role that he got turned down from in front of these producers, Irwin and was it Bob Winkler? I think his brother. I don't know. These MGM guys, old timey MGM guys. And he mentioned when he didn't get the role, well, I write too. And they said, oh, what do you write? And he turned in Rocky, and these guys made Rocky happen. So these producers, and now the 93-year-old Irwin Winkler, Is that his name? I've seen the name, you know, my whole life. Winkler. Winkler and Chardoff. Bob Chardoff and Irwin Winkler. They own the rights to Rocky. They're the producers who bought the rights to Rocky. And Sly has decided, you know, now that they're getting into the twilight of their years, to publicly, I've only ever heard him say nice things about these guys because they did make his entire life, made his entire career. But he's real pissed that he doesn't have any rights to that IP at all.
Yeah.
When he really is the kind of beginning, middle, and end of that thing. So he posted a bizarre kind of impressionistic painting of that 93-year-old producer with like a snake tongue, you know, looking like a
very real, reptilian.
Like,
you
know, Illuminati. And he posted, he was like, here's a very flattering painting of my friend Owen Winkler.
As a fucking snake.
He's a snake. And he's greedy and lazy. Irwin Winkler stinks. That's right, he stinks. So he said, after Irwin controlling Rocky for over 47 years, and now Creed, I really would like have at least what's left of my rights back before passing it on to only your children. I believe that would be a fair gesture from this 93-year-old gentleman? This is a painful subject that eats at my soul. Because I wanted to leave something of Rocky for my children. But it's always great hearing from the loyal fans. Keep punching. So he's just really pissed that he's... And it does. I mean, I don't know exactly what it would look like. Like, would he give him the right to play the character anywhere he'd like, but they have to come to them to make a movie or.
I don't know, man. I don't know what that boomer's talking about.
I guess I can see why. I mean, then again, like if we were to compare the net worths of these two guys, I'm guessing Stallone has made out better.
Yeah. But I understand why he would want ownership of it, but like sometimes, but I don't know. I could see why like nobody would go for that deal.
We were talking.
You about, have the rights to Rocky, and it's like, no, I'm not gonna give him away. What? Yeah,
keep it. You keep it. We were talking about Beavis and Butthead last time, and I was reading about how Mike Judge, he thought like he made those Beavis and Butthead cartoons, and they were like, these are really funny. Can we buy the rights from you? And he was like, yeah, sure. And he sold it for like $18,000 or something to MTV. And he thought it was just like, you know, that's my admission fee to, you know, start working maybe in Hollywood for somebody. And yeah, for the longest time he had just, you know, I think he was salaried and that's about it. And then years later when they wanted him to do more, he was able to renegotiate and get some rights back. But I always remember like, it was around the time that SouthParkStudios.com launched, and it was like pre-Hulu, pre-all that. And those guys were like, how about this? You know, yeah, we'll contract for another 3 seasons of South Park, but give us all online streaming rights. You know, online streaming doesn't really do anything anyway.
Yeah.
So just give Matt Stone and Trey Parker in name.
I remember they said something funny at the time. It was like, we were sick of like pirating our own videos.
I remember they said that. Well, it turns out that contract gave them rights to like, they're the ones who get paid when HBO Max wants the library.
No.
And they're just getting crazy rich off of it. Versus like a Mike Judge who's made a million things. But I mean, the guy, as far as I can tell, he's probably worth like $30 million or something, but not a billion.
I did watch during my COVID, I watched Beavis and Butthead do the universe. Oh, nice. It's such a fun throwback. Like, it's just like so stupid and so like, but so it's just perfect. It's perfect for what it is. You know, it's just, you feel immediately at home in the 90s when you're watching them being this like invincible and stupid. And it's great. It is a great experience.
Yeah, I highly recommend it, and I'll definitely watch their new show, the new season of their show, when it comes out in August. So that's Stallone, poor Stallone. I feel a little bit bad for him.
The Snake Men, they got my rights.
it would be weird, you know, like John has no rights to Box Mac. You know, you got to give John some rights to Box Mac.
No, he doesn't. No.
No. Yeah. EJ and Frankie, those snakes.
He'll make a boomery like Instagram post about it.
It is a quick question. Do you think that I feel like I'm speaking to everybody at this point? Everybody has experienced this. Surely none of us have thought to say it out loud. Do these Disney Plus shows intentionally add 20 minutes worth of credits just to pad out the time?
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Is that all about?
I think so. I don't know, but I think they just really like to make credit sequences. And so they just,
You know, if you want to do like the Mandalorian concept art thing, if you want to do the Ms. Marvel, like artistic, you know, but then it carries on for another 10 minutes of just kind of black, boring, you know, white text on black screen. And I don't know, like, it makes me miss, like, the syndicated television days where they just rolled that shit fast.
Yeah. And then, like, yeah, and there's, like, an ad for the next thing coming up. And, like, or, like, yeah, playing over the credits.
I swear, like, because when you hear people review the shows, they always talk about, like, oh, wow, like, this episode of Kenobi is 50 minutes. I'm like, no, it's not. It's, like, 20. it's, like, all credits.
And then there's like rarely any like mid-credit stuff. So you just like, you like skim it real quick, like the playhead be like, is there anything? Nope. Okay. But usually it's not until like the end, like Miss Marvel had one with Brie Larson there.
Yeah.
That show can be like whatever.
It's, you know, my calibration is all off now because like I started off like, not, you know, when I first saw Falcon and Winter Soldier, I was like, this isn't really my thing. And now looking back on it, I'm like, well, compared to the like some of the shit that followed.
Yeah. I mean, Ms. Marvel is better than Moon Knight and ultimately, but
yeah, Moon Knight is like the ultimate like low. I was thinking about, Moon Knight is worth for me, for my dollar. You know, I'm not trying to be toxic. Moon Knight is worse for me than just about anything. I mean, I'd prefer to watch The Incredible Hulk with Edward Norton.
And it's kind of a shame because I really liked Ethan Hawke in it. Like, I think he's just like really got a great presence. But like, what was that character? I don't even know.
Yeah, like, could you even describe it back to me?
It's like, yeah, that whole thing was squandered. Oscar Isaac squandered again. He's just like paid by Disney to be squandered.
Yeah, it's like a shame to see that guy repeatedly. I mean, maybe people liked Moon Knight, I don't know. And maybe, I mean, Marvel has a little bit of a history of like doing a good job repurposing old characters, but I don't know.
Well, the whole phase four stuff just feels very like, what are they doing? Throwing stuff, aimless, yeah. Like, stalling for time until they come up with something good.
So strange. At first, it was like, maybe it's from COVID. And they're like, no, it can't be. They've made like 25 movies since 2019.
Yeah.
And every one of them is disconnected. And
we were talking about, like, the Eternals, how, like, the big guy came out of the Earth and nobody's, like, talking about it.
No.
Big like celestial or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, at least like can like Shang-Chi be in a few of these movies, you know, just to make me feel like I'm going somewhere. That is the fun, is like you're supposed to be mounting something. I'm sure I'm just toxic.
Because you just saw Thor, right?
I did. Yeah. So you saw Thor last time, I saw Thor this time. And this is the way I want to frame this conversation. I saw Thor this week and I saw Robert Eggers' Northman this week, which you also saw.
Yes.
And for, you know, obviously, Alexander Skarsgård in The Northman plays a Viking warrior out for revenge and blood who intends to die by the sword and go to the halls of Valhalla.
Right.
And I'm like, you know, this is, and Alexander Skarsgård totally could have played Thor, like had Chris Hemsworth not come along. I mean, I wonder if he, even back then, if he was on the short list or something. Cause
yeah, it might have been a an alternate universe where he did.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, when I found out, like, oh, of course he's gonna play like an Eric the Red type character, you know, like, who else would you get? He's literally the only person in Hollywood.
Yeah. Skarsgård, come on.
We literally have a Viking on our hands. Maybe one thing that would have been cool if they really wanted to like impress me is get Brock Lesnar to play one of them.
One of them.
Just, yeah, some crazy bitch. I think it's fair for anybody to say that Thor Love and Thunder is a miss. It's like, there's clearly tonal problems with it. I've been doing a little bit of a deep dive, listening to Taika, trying to understand what the hell happened. It really does sound like he went on like a Judd Apatow-esque approach to this, where he openly says, yeah, I really don't like pay attention to what the previous movies did. I'm too lazy to do that. I kind of just want to do my own thing, and I'll let Kevin Feige tell me if it's conflicting with anything that I'm already doing.
It's like when he was talking about Star Wars. That's why he kind of wanted to like go to like a different like timeline or time period. Cause he's like, I can't watch these movies. I can't research it. I can't do anything. Yeah. I am too busy. Like, he's James Rolfe or something.
Yeah. Hire me for all your projects, but I'm too busy. And then he's like, the only thing I can be fucked to do is show up to set and improvise with my buddies and the people with whom I'm having threesomes. And I really did, you know, we've been joking about like, because he was making tabloids a year ago where he and Tressa Thompson and his girlfriend are having a threesome. And there's like these like weird candid photos of them all making out in like a dugout or something. Yeah. Vanity Fair had one of those videos where he and the actress, so Tressa Thompson, they like go through Tessa. I keep saying Tressa. They go through like a scene and use a marker and stuff. And he like can't be fucked to do it. He just wants to joke around. He doesn't want to give you any interesting insights about what he was thinking on that day. She's trying. He's standing really, really close to her and being super flirty with her. And all I can think, and she's being receptive to it. So it's only creepy for us.
No.
But I don't think it was creepy for her. It didn't feel like it was. And all I can think is like, yeah, is he like, do we have a major ego problem on our hands with this guy? Cause he made some really killer movies. Jojo Rabbit, Thor Ragnarok, and What We Do in the Shadows are all winners. You know?
I think his ego like inflated past the point where I think it's gone to him. To him. And he thinks he could just really just throw in as many jokes as he can, put Korg in as much of the screen time as he can.
And didn't it feel to you like it was shot like in that kind of prequels-esque way with the reverse shot? I think they shot a lot of it on the volume, actually, the dreaded volume, which is starting to really cause problems for these projects.
Yeah, it definitely looked very green screeny. I don't know if it was volume or not, but it definitely felt claustrophobic in that way. That happens.
That's what sticks in my mind when I think of the movie. I think of these kind of awkwardly staged scenes with bad blocking, or like with like static blocking. He kept saying, he's like, yeah, so I made an 8-hour version of it where all we did was joke around, and then I took 14 months to shape it and make it into something that makes sense. I'm like, I don't think you accomplished that, actually. I don't think the 2-hour version makes a lot more sense than that's no way to make that may be a way to make a Christopher Guest film or What We Do in the Shadows, but that's no way to make a Thor film.
Yeah, it felt a little bit like Calvin Ball, where they're making up the rules while you go along, which I don't think really works for Marvel movies. You kind of need those like stakes. You need like the rule. Like, you need to know what Iron Man can do, what Thor can do, because he was just like giving his powers to children randomly. There was like a wish making thing that breaks all of the like previous movies.
Yeah, like, why does Mjolnir make her healthy, and then why does it make her sick? Like, you know, those are the rules, I guess.
Yeah, it felt a little bit too like wishy-washy all the time. And
there were people that were like, yeah, and you know, sometimes it was really, really depressing and really serious, like with the cancer and with Gore, and then other times it was too jokey. And I was like, yeah, that's true. He obviously wasn't like managing, you know, Because if you decide, like, I'm going to go ahead and have, like, a, you know, a cancer death in my film, spoilers, then the rest of it
should need a really funny cancer death in it.
Yeah. Or, like, I'm literally going to open the film with a child starving to death, you know? But I will say this, and this is even more to his fault. It's not like I was like, one minute I'm crying, one minute I'm being told to laugh. Like, I'm not feeling the emotion even from the depressing scenes because,
no. Yeah,
Christian Bale is acting his ass off to like a child who's like, it's Chris Hemsworth's kid who, yeah, like, she's no actress and she's just sitting there staring at Christian Bale and he's acting his ass off at her. So, like, I'm not feeling anything. And then in the very next scene, he's talking to like that, like, very comedic god that looked like She-Hulk, you know, like that's that janky CG that where they made him tall.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that was weird. Yeah. I feel like Christian Bale was squandered in this movie as well. Speaking of squandered villains,
he was a lot. And so you'd have to put him in a movie that required a lot. And this movie didn't require anything.
For a god butcher, he didn't butcher many gods either.
even like Natalie Portman dying or whatever. I was like, it's just hot Natalie Portman with makeup. Like, it doesn't look to me like, oh my God, she's dying of cancer. Like it didn't come home for me or anything.
No.
So it didn't feel like there was any passion behind this. The whole thing felt pretty soulless. Now, that's not to say that I sat there angry at it, like I think some people did. My wife, for instance, sat there angry at it the whole time. She was like, I can't believe this is what I'm out here doing on like a date night.
Yeah. I liked enough about it. I just felt it was tedious. It was just,
yeah,
like with so many jokes and so many things happening, I definitely was checking my watch.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But I guess it's like, so then the question is, how bad of an experience is it to just sit there eating crackers? You know, because that's what it felt like to me. It was like, there's just nothing here. But I also was, you know, yeah, I was offended. I was offended by it on some level, but not quite on the same level as, like, I do find like Kenobi to be pretty offensive. And like, I wasn't offended. And now this is where we really depart. I found Doctor Strange 2 to be really offensive to the audience who came here to see a story.
I disagree because I was having a good time. Like, it was just a ride for me in a way. And I was there for it. So
yeah,
if I'm like engrossed with it and I'm keeping up with the story and it's like I liked some of the horror elements. I liked some of the adventure to it. So there was things about it that kept me going with the movie, but with Thor Love and Thunder, it's like, it was just tedious. It kept bringing me out of the movie and I was just like, ugh.
At least Chris Hemsworth is pretty charismatic, and even if his jokes aren't funny, like, I feel like he's kind of funny in essence. Whereas, like, yeah, there's nothing going on with Benedict for me.
I don't know. I think he's charming. I think
it may be an expectations thing. Normally, I'm like, no. Like, I give the movie, you know, I go in cold. I, whatever the movie's wanting to accomplish, I try to receive that. But I'll admit, I went into Doctor Strange 2 being like, all right, this ought to be the convergence of.
Yeah. Loki. If you don't go in with that, I went in with nothing and I was pretty pleasantly surprised, especially because, like I said, I was just like finishing up Moon Knight and Obi-Wan Kenobi and shit. And I was just like, or not, maybe not Obi-Wan at that time, but yeah, that it was just like, my expectations were lower, I think. But I put it on for the Samsung review. And I was watching it and I was enjoying myself. I don't know. There's some energy to it that brings me along. I don't know why.
Well, likewise, I think if I had gone, you know, opening night to Thor and I was expecting like a Taika Waititi excellence thing and I got that, I would have been like, what the fuck? But I got 2 weeks of people telling me like, don't expect a lot. The jokes aren't funny, you know? And so I totally went in being like, all right, like, you know, let's lower our bar a lot. And so I thought it was pretty disappointing, but I wasn't as frustrated for, you know, because my expectations were set.
No. I think if it was like funnier, it would just be a better experience. Like, especially because I was in an audience and they were silent and it's just, It's just like, why are we here? It's just like, why are we listening to all these jokes?
Yeah.
And why am I doing this lame story? Yeah, the cancer story, the wishes and gore. And it's like,
I for some reason, you know, and I don't know why. Yeah, Russell Crowe worked on me.
Oh, yeah. He was great. He was really funny.
When he called him baby cakes or whatever. And I like that he... I like that he's just big and fat now. Like, truly. Yeah, there's a while there, he was kind of thick. I remember when he was in Les Mis. Remember, you know, and I make fun of him where he's like, halt in the darkness. he just cannot sing. I mean, he's hitting the notes, but that's not a singing voice. But Nina and I actually really liked that Hugh Jackman Les Mis movie. And I remember we were watching the Oscars in 2012 or whatever. And they did, you know, one day more. And they all came out and did the live performance at the Oscars. And he came out for his part. And he says, one more day to revolution. We will nip it in the bud. And I remember Nina said, like, look at Russell Crowe, all fat and purposeful. And as I always remember, Russell Crowe, fat and purposeful. And now he's like, truly just very overweight.
Yeah, no, he had a great, I liked his little Greek accent. I liked it. It was funny.
Super funny. So I could have spent more time with him, I guess. But all of the criticisms are totally valid, you know, and how come nobody dies in this fucking thing? But I was surprised that, like, yeah, Chris Hemsworth signed on for the whole film. I really didn't expect that for some reason. I thought that, you know what I thought was going to happen?
A bait and switch.
Once I heard that, like, oh no, it's his movie still, I still thought, I wasn't convinced. I was like, he's going to be in the whole thing, but he's going to die at the end for sure. And no, they did. I actually thought was going to happen. I thought that Jane was going to be dying of cancer because I knew that was the comic book storyline, and that through some transfer of a fucking hammer or something, he was going to get cancer. I actually thought that. And, because I heard people were saying, like, I cried at the end. I was like, does Thor get cancer at the end? And then she lives on. She's new Thor. He loves her. I totally thought that's what was going to happen. He's going to get out of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Like, he must want to.
It was Natalie who wanted out again.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, that's funny. Because, like, I thought that this was a passing of the torch thing. But I suppose that's the problem with choosing, an older and very, very famous person to do that with. Is, like, you know. There, I guess they'll have to raise this new daughter. You know, Chris Hemsworth's daughter will be the new
thing. Yeah.
And the whole thing with the Guardians not being in it, that's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, I thought they were done dirty, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I see the problem of, like, he's so much more powerful than all of them that, like, can you sustain a whole film where they're a team? But I don't know. I thought that was the tease at the end of Endgame. It was like, next time you see them, they're all going to be together. It's going to be great.
Yeah, you could do it. Come on.
He was riding around on a broom. You know, that was the moment where I texted you guys and was like, the fuck is going on?
The Northman. Northman is good.
Holy shit, dude. Well, so the thing that sticks out in my mind about Thor is, wow, like, there's very few planned shots or designed shots in this thing. It's like almost all coverage for comedy. And even though there was lots of comedy in Ragnarok, do you remember that Ragnarok had a lot of design shots? Like, there was like him chasing after that giant like dragon thing. And there was like all that stuff with Hela. I also thought Hela was like a more threatening villain overall.
Right.
And a more interesting one. There was a lot of visual idea, you know, everything with Hulk and the fight with Hulk.
Planet Hulk stuff. Yeah.
When he, you know, what were you the god of again? And he becomes Thunder Thor and he, you know, attacks all those guys in slow motion. It was just a lot of good visual. There was a lot of good filmmaking, which there was a lot less of that in this. There was the Mario Galaxy scene. That was about it. I thought it was kind of cool, I guess. The black and white Mario Galaxy.
Yeah,
thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But this fucking Robert Eggers, man. This dude, I was hearing Willem Dafoe talk about it. This dude doesn't shoot any coverage. This dude is like, no, I'm going to design this movie top to bottom.
Yeah, you can tell. You can tell.
Like, every shot is going to be because I wanted it that way. And he said something, you know, that was, I thought, really resonated, where he was like, I only work on projects I'm passionate about because there's no time in life to do anything else. And making a movie is hard enough. So he's like, if I'm doing it, it's because I really want to do it. I don't know. I was super impressed by this movie. I've heard from a few people who weren't crazy about it. I love The Witch. I didn't see The Lighthouse. You did, right?
Yeah, The Lighthouse is similar in that it's very visually pleasing. Like, so many great shots in it. It's funny, but I think both these movies are way more straightforward than people, like, when they talk about them, they're like, oh, that's so trippy, it's so this, and then like I watch these movies, I'm like, these are so straightforward.
But
there's allegorical fanciful things happening, but they're, I feel like it's pretty self-explanatory what they're like getting across.
Yeah. Does it feel like it's a big obstacle to get into these movies? It doesn't feel that way to me.
Yeah. I don't think so. When people so trippy, like, because The Lighthouse, people said that too. And it's wicked straightforward. Like, it's two guys stranded who go like progressively mad because they ran out of food. But, and this is just Hamlet basically. And
he said as much. He said, he was like, I knew I wanted to indulge the language. I wanted to, you know, go with this really kind of like operatic visual. And I knew that it might be, you know, an obstacle for some people to get into some of that stuff. So I chose an intentionally simple plot, a story that, you know, and I guess Skarsgård, he was looking to do a project like this too, where he's like, let's do like a classic Viking story. They're all about revenge. They're all about family and internal family struggles. And he was like, it's literally the Viking story that was the source material for Hamlet and would go on to be Lion King. And so he's like, everybody knows this story. Brother kills king, son comes back for revenge. And he's like, so once we know that like the humanity of the story is going to be really accessible to everybody who speaks any language, then you know, you can indulge all this material stuff, which is visual stuff, which is really cool.
Yeah. I felt like maybe sometimes I was being a little bit too indulgent. Like, there are some parts of like, okay, enough dude screaming, huh? bearded dude screaming, but you got to admire this film. And the other thing that brought me out of it was Nicole Kidman, because she looks like she's got a fit for like that face is very artificial.
That is a problem.
Medical California's medical wonder in that face.
That's definitely a problem. But you're right. Her performance was actually really on point. Like, it was clear she did not phone it in. I don't think this director lets anybody phone it in. I think he's one of those directors that's like, if you're showing up.
Yeah, she was just out of place, but she was phenomenally acted. So as soon as when you got into the scene, you're like, okay, great. But
you know who he reminds me of is the guy who did Hereditary and Midsommar, that director.
Yeah. You know, oh, definitely.
These guys are willing to like go there.
Exactly. I would recommend Lighthouse too if you really enjoyed this. Maybe give it a few weeks so like you can
calm down from the screaming.
Calm down from the men screaming, because there's a little bit of that.
There was this one scene in The Northman where, I don't think it's spoilers, but in case you don't want to know anything about the movie, cover your ears or something. But so he intentionally is taken as a slave to get back onto into this little village where his evil uncle, is currently the king. And because he's a slave, Skarsgård, he's made to play like a weird kind of like rudimentary sport, you know, with some like hard, dangerous ball.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Where it's okay to, you know, whatever. It's okay to kill each other. And the prince, this young prince who's, you know, the uncle's new son, he decides to run out on the field. He gets real jazzed up and he runs out on the field and he almost very nearly gets himself killed. And Skarsgård takes a hold of the guy who almost kills him and he goes ham on him. You know, he goes screamy Viking crazy. on him. And I was on the elliptical at the time and I totally felt it. Like, I felt like the heart, but like my own heart race, right? Like, you know, it clicked into my animal brain of like, don't you touch that child, you know, like, let's like shake this person and kill them until they're no longer a threat to that child. You know, it's just, these are, I love movies that get under the skin like this, that get into the reptile brain, you know, that, and I was thinking, I was like, I don't see a reason that a movie like this, had we gone along a different timeline, you know, in film history where it wasn't about franchises and IPs, this would have been a blockbuster. You know, it's visually insane. It's starring these huge names, these very sexy people, grand story.
I think the style might be a little too niche. I'm thinking of Braveheart. That was broad. It was a broad story with broad filmmaking sensibilities.
Yeah. Where the language is real dumbed down.
I mean, I would watch something like this. This is my kind of blockbuster. But I feel like it. I think there's a reason why the audience score is low, and I understand why it's low. But but I would like weird, screamy, sexy movies to be big budget like this. I would love
some of those. Some of those visuals in the volcano at the end. Yeah. Like, God. I love that when it ended, it ended.
Yeah.
You know, and that was it. And it told its story. And it was, everybody was just so in. And I love those design shots. I love that there's so little coverage. You know, so for people who don't know what I'm talking about, when you go and shoot a scene, you write a scene, you go and shoot it. And the prudent thing to do to make sure that you're safe when you're editing the film is you take sort of static or isolated shots of each person. So if EJ has dialogue, we take a one shot of EJ. We take a one shot of me so that
you'll
can
take like a medium shot sometimes and a wide.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe you take a wide of the whole thing. So you have a safe wide that you can jump out to if you have to in the edit. And a design shot would be like, no, we're going to do this, you know, this shot on rails that goes in and out. And like the whole movie is shot that way.
Yeah, it's nuts. It's got so much care to it. It's acted very well.
Yeah.
Everybody like is so striking. Like they're like Anna Taylor-Joy is just like a in this painting too, and it's crazy.
I like her a lot.
She's got a interesting look to her. She's not like she's definitely like pretty, but she's got like kind of like a serpentine thing going to her.
She's beautiful, but she's also like a reptile. It's weird. Give me one second. I realized my power strip is not fully plugged in. There we go. Was there anything else I wanted to say about The Northman? I think that was basically it.
Oh yeah, it is weird to think about like old blockbusters back in the day, because like people would like, I don't know, like they try to make like Powder a blockbuster, you know, like, like that weird movie. Like there used to be things other than franchises.
There was a movie that my dad rented when we were kids from the 60s called Papillon. Maybe it was the 70s. It starred Steve McQueen. It may have been like late 60s. Steve McQueen and Dustin Hoffman, a young Dustin Hoffman. And it was about a guy who was serving, you know, this massive jail sentence, and he breaks out, but he gets recaptured and he's put in solitary confinement. And then there's massive time jumps. And this is kind of like a big epic, but also it's sort of intimate. And it's starring, you know, Steve McQueen, you know, big famous actor. And I think it was the kind of, you know, it wasn't Star Wars. I'm sure it didn't make, you know, $1 trillion at the time, but it was a big, big movie, you know, like a Lawrence of Arabia.
Yeah. There was actually room for that kind of stuff. Now that would just like, I don't know, direct to Netflix.
I mean, hell, even, even Titanic, you know, like.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Something like that, where it's like, look, it's a one-off. It's about an historical event, and it's starring sexy kids, and you know, it's 3 hours, and it's got some state-of-the-art graphics in it, you know. And I just kind of miss. It would be cool if there could be another big hit that's like a standalone thing, you know.
Yeah, and you don't need to have like a Christopher Nolan behind it.
Christopher Nolan and Tarantino are those directors are kind of the closest thing to their own franchises. Well, on the topic of things that are awesome, there's been 2 episodes of Saul.
Yeah, Better Call Saul. My goodness. And we didn't really talk about the, I don't think we talked about the, like the ending of the last first half either. Where?
Oh, really? We didn't even talk. We didn't talk about the spoilers.
So. Spoilers for the Better Call Saul.
The killing of Howard, yeah. Patrick Fabian's character, which was a shock. At first I thought like it would feel really wrong to kill any of these kind of like, you know, Jimmy's World characters.
Mm-hmm.
Like you don't have to, you know, just because they're not in Breaking Bad doesn't mean you have to kill them, you know?
Yeah,
so I thought, I was like, oh, I hope they don't kill them. But of course they always make it make sense. Always, always, always.
Yeah. And it's great that you have this character with Howard, and you're just like, I don't know, you hated him. But yeah. Then you realize, you know, the part where Mike sits Kim and Saul down, and he's like, well, you were sort of doing this to him anyway, right? Like, he's like, we're continuing the fiction that you were already writing, which like really like I think like makes it real that they were sort of killing him, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, totally. And for that reason, like, yeah, I think a lesser show would have had the shock moment of Lalo killing Howard. You know, it'd be a gimmick. It'd be like, oh my God, you didn't see that coming. You didn't know we were going to destabilize the plot that much. But this show gave you six episodes of runway that made Howard important to the overall arc. Because otherwise, why is he there? And then there's this question, you know, so then they had to get rid of Lalo. And I think, yeah, burying the two bastards together under the lab is really like haunt. Like, I went to bed having weird haunting dreams.
When they like just flop them into that hole together, ugh. And these two like so different people being like right. In this like very cold, remorseless pit, yeah. You know, it's just like it's creepy. It's creepy.
And
that
one of the dead guys so unnecessarily killed the other, you know?
Yeah. It is haunting. I think it makes sense that Gus would be the one to finally get Lalo. It just makes sense. Like it wasn't going to be like Saul, you know.
I thought for sure it was going to be Mike, and that it was going to be, you know, sort of a close to the end of Mike's arc, and it would sort of tie a bow around his loyalty to Gus or something like that. But it ended up being much more interesting to see Mike be taken by surprise. And now we have this kind of new dimension to their relationship that I never expected, which was that like Mike and Gus don't exactly go together, you know,
mm-hmm.
Like they're not really a super compatible pair, where in Breaking Bad, it feels like they are, but not so much. You know, Gus is a bigger son of a bitch than Mike is.
Yeah. So and it was also good to, I loved him shit talking to Lalo. That was so great too. And just like getting the actor to do his chops, his angry chops. And then,
and again, you know, him getting in a lucky shot, you know, might be the kind of thing that I might bump into, but they did it artistically. They had the lights go out. You don't know if he got hit or not. Gus is sitting there scared. You know, it's weird to see Gus scared. We don't see that in Breaking Bad at all. But then when the lights come on and you learn that he won, the character shifts essentially into the Breaking Bad version of himself, which is Lalo, all confidence.
All Lalo having that Cheshire Cat smile and like coughing up blood, like he just going out in such a Lalo way. It just, they really do respect their characters. They respect the audience. And it's just like, it's beautiful to see something like that.
And it's all so sophisticated, you know, the visual language and the writing and the acting and all of it is all, you know, excellent. But I think at the root of it, it just, I'm not necessarily convinced that everybody that works on this thing is just a natural talent, you know?
No.
I think it might be more like they take a lot of time and care and thought. Like, let's really think about specifically the writing from every angle so that no matter what we shoot, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
You know? And it's always unexpected too. It's always, it's never quite what I thought, you know? And sometimes it's simpler than I thought, and sometimes it's more complex than I thought, but it always makes sense. So yeah, the big one now is, it was the, I think the question of the whole series was starting to be, what of Kim? You know, why don't we see Kim in Breaking Bad? It's starting to be like the mystery of the show.
Hmm.
And they, and, you know, does she go to jail? Does she die? Does she, you know, does she put him up to becoming a more Saul than he already is or whatever? And they just answered it so simply, so beautifully, which was like, she committed her final crime with him that she can't really cope with. Yeah. She doesn't like herself when she's with him, you know?
Yeah. And it was like her final like gift to her was like lying to the Howard's widow, you know? It's like,
yeah,
it's like,
how heartbreaking was that kiss in the garage?
Yeah.
You know, when you just, and it echoes, you know, the kisses that they had in the garage early on in the show. Mm. So they have some nice, you know, callback, but yeah, when she, I didn't quite know what was going on either, but when she kissed him, I was like, I know what's going on.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. And and then the dialogue, you know, I love you and so what, you know, like we're hurting people.
Yeah. And just like, yeah, Saul's like desperation there too. It was so like painful and it was a great scene. And like, you know, again, like you said, surprisingly simple. Like, of course, of course, like you, like, of course, that's what it is. It's not something like contrived and silly that you'd see in like a lesser show. But
the thing that rocked my world, the thing that I haven't stopped thinking about was the way that they, you know, because the second major, or maybe it was the first major mystery of the show is when will he become the Saul we know from Breaking Bad? And boy, have they made you wait, you know?
Like, yeah.
You've been sitting here with essentially a different human being named Jimmy McGill. Or like, I can't see it. You know, when in Breaking Bad, he was taking Viagra and he was, you know, sexually harassing his assistant and, you know, he didn't give a fuck about anybody. You can't imagine him being with Kim. And yeah, to go from like that scene with Kim to a transition, a confusing transition where you actually don't know that you did a time jump at first, which is so brilliant. And then to just calmly transition into a morning in Saul Goodman's life, the Saul Goodman that we all know. It just blew my mind. Yeah. I was like, that's so smart. And it gets us with four episodes of clearance. It gets us to the Breaking Bad timeline.
Yeah.
Without a lot of fanfare, there's no major moment where he takes the mask off and it's just calm.
Yeah, it makes sense. And I going before that, I love the even just the quiet scene with Gus where he like is at the restaurant and he like almost allows himself to enjoy life for a second before he's like, oh, you know what? I gotta wall up again, you know?
Yeah.
It was great.
And if that's the last time we see Gus in this show, that would be fine.
Yeah, it would be perfect. It'd be perfect.
You know, because we know we have the rest of him.
Yeah.
So other major questions from here, I think, include.
You got the obviously Gene story.
Yeah, all that Gene stuff is I'm totally intrigued by. And what's, you know, does Mike, because Mike is the other main character of the show. Does he get a new ending? You know, he got an ending in Breaking Bad. Does he get kind of a new ending? Like, do we leave him in some new state?
Yeah. you joked that's like he reveals that he had a bulletproof vest on when when Walt shot him. Yeah.
But I was like, wait, didn't they like disintegrate his body? And I was like, well, yes, but yeah, something distracts Walt and Todd, and he kind of surreptitiously steps out of the crate and, you know, jaunts away. It could be like Russell Crowe. He could have an after credit scene where like there's a bunch of women like helping him like patch up,
put his skin like, back time. On.
Or how about that scene with Nacho's dad and Mike? Yeah. You know, never occurred to me somehow because I'm an idiot, but it's two, you know, aged dads who lost their sons, who were in two very different places about it.
Yeah.
One is in a deeply unhealthy place. You know, Mike is so competent that you don't think of him as an unhealthy person, but he's a deeply unhealthy person, you know?
Yeah.
The way he's dealing with his grief. Like Nacho's dad is processing his grief so much better.
Yeah. It's like so much more mature about it. And he just, he obviously just heard about it. And he's like, cycles of revenge.
Yeah.
We don't need to do somewhere. That.
Oh my God. That show. When it's all over, man, it's going to be a sad thing.
Yeah. We'll have nothing.
Yeah, it's like a pagan sacrifice. Like, we had to sacrifice all media for one good show.
Yeah. Well, hey, man, it's, you know, it's good. And it's good in its own right. It's not just, you know, it's not in the same way as Breaking Bad.
No.
And it'll never be. But it's got its own thing. It does its own thing carefully, perfectly, masterfully. And man, I can't even imagine what they're going to do for the next four episodes. Jesus.
You could just learn so much about filmmaking and writing just by studying that show carefully and just thinking about that show carefully.
No.
It's really, really, it's as good as it gets, I think. Yeah, just so real quick. So, YouTube Shorts. I hear the word on the street is that you kind of have to use them now if you want to make like your channel discoverable.
Yeah, a lot of channels have stopped growing, and it's mostly because they don't do shorts.
Yeah,
and big channels too. So it seems like there is some sort of algorithm, and we've hit on that obviously a little.
Yeah,
bit.
Like sort of serendipitously, because I hadn't been like planning my big shorts moment.
No.
It was just like an idea that came to mind, we're at a point now where that Lucasfilm should steal this idea video, that short on our, is now up to like 700,000 views on YouTube.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's like approaching a million, and yeah, somebody at work was like, hey, look who I found on YouTube. I was like, oh my god, this thing's getting around.
It's like, what's like 12 football stadiums right now?
It's insane. So we get a comment every 5 minutes. Like, I had to turn notifications off because it's just one after another. So there's two. That one's obviously performing better, and the comments are generally positive. They continue to just be it's like a weird, it's like a bot farm of people being like, yeah, that's a very good idea. Yes, we
should. Somebody
should
hire him.
And then, but Disney won't do it. And then, no, we should get away from Skywalkers. You know, like, it's like the same stupid. But then there's that other fucking video where we ripped on the prequels farting droids, man. And I know we've talked about it at length, but it's every 5 minutes I get a comment that's like, these virgin Gen X man children don't understand that the prequels were made for kids. I can't believe it's continuing. I feel like I want to like put out a press release to the entire world that's like, I've heard you.
Yeah, we're still right.
Yeah.
I was listening to somebody who did a documentary on like something I'll never watch. It's like Vice TV or something. And they did a interview with Marsha Lucas, and she was talking about how she was really trying to convince George to take Star Wars seriously. He's like, it's because George wanted to keep putting fucking slapstick in Star Wars, the first one. And she was like, no, you should take this seriously. Even though our target audience would be these 10-year-old boys, I think it's important for them that you take this seriously. And so that's when I think, and then when she's out of the picture after the first three movies and he goes back to the prequels, what does he do? He puts these farting droids.
Marsha was saving grace.
I think she was like, she injected that first bit of soul into Star Wars. And I think that's what I think Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau get that too, is that you have to take it seriously, even though it's for the target demographic is like 10 to 13 year olds or whatever. But
is it though? How could it possibly? It's certainly
no,
not.
No,
now.
it is that, but it is adult. It's adult, like forward thinking, like, you know, like it's looking toward adulthood. So you do have to take it seriously because then everyone can enjoy it. It's a, but, that's my criticism of the prequels. And they'll always be that. It will always be too goofy, too weird, too.
Maybe it's because like people don't necessarily, you know, they don't know a lot about filmmaking. And so when I see like shot reverse shot and it's on a green screen and it sucks, maybe they don't see that as like, you could do better than this. You know, you could design a shot and you could like direct the actors and they could know what they're supposed to be reacting to. No, I liked it. Honestly, a lot of the comments are like the lightsaber fights are really good in the prequel, so I love them.
Yeah, I mean they are kind of they're interesting. I mean, Phantom Menace, like that it's like you never saw anything like that. It blew your tits off in a way.
Yeah.
Especially
yeah.
with the soundtrack. It's like, come on. But
the times I've said like, okay, but what about the gruesome fiery death at the end of Revenge of the Sith? You know, to this criticism of They're for Children. A lot of times the response I get is like, well, children can handle mature concepts. And I'm like, so what is it, asshole? Like, it's for babies. That's why it. And here's the other thing. If you can't criticize it because it's, if you're an adult and you can't criticize it because it's for children, how can you like it if it's for children?
No.
I ask you.
No, it's
that's a virgin talking. Never had, never seen a pussy. My whole life.
Yeah.
Is that it? Have we made time? I think we've made time, probably,
so.
Right?
I don't think that. I mean, I finished my NES script, so I'm working on that.
Oh yeah.
I'll probably do some like low stakes food videos too. Like really, mm-hmm. really. Like I have some barbecue sauces that I bought that I'm just gonna like taste them on camera.
Yep.
Quick stuff like that.
I hope people like church fair content because I've got like 4 church fair videos coming out like in a row. There's like the Little Compton one. There was another one we did at this place called the Amicable Church. There's probably going to be St. John the Baptist. We did the book fair. You remember we did a book fair in like 2015? Like, yeah, we did that again, but it was like packed this time. So yeah, lots of stuff like that. We almost did the Westport Fair again, but we were at Great Wolf Lodge when John and Matt went. So here's a funny story. Every single year, there's like a kite festival in Newport. I've never been. Matt, who I've not seen in a long time, always is like, we should go to the kite festival. You guys would really like the kites. I really want to fly some kites. Gloria will really like the kites. I think I can get John to like the kites. He never, like, and nobody bites, man. Like, nobody ever is like, yeah, maybe. everybody, like, turns away whenever he brings up these kites. And, you know, persistent lad that he is, the other day he sends me a bunch of photos. It's John at the kite festival. He got John at the kite festival.
Nice.
So now, of course, I'm like, well, maybe I should have gone and filmed John at the kite festival.
Damn
it. All right, well, we'll see him next time. Yeah. Soon enough, I've had an idea for a topic to go over every video game genre we can think of and say whether or not we like them.
Yeah, we could do that.
Something about, because as it turns out, I think I dislike most game genres.
Yeah, I think so. You have a very specific thing that you like. Like I'm willing to get a little like stupid with numbers and RPG stuff.
Yeah, whenever they make fun, like on Cinemassacre Truth, whenever they make fun of Mike, they're like, this motherfucker, all he likes is Zelda and Mario. And he's such a douche. I'm like, I relate. Is my nostalgia from my 90s. Maybe that's me. Maybe I'm Mike. All he likes is McDonald's. I'm like, McDonald's is pretty sweet.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet. Tastes good.
All right, I'm going to go take an antibiotics. Shit.
Get a shit. Because I don't have any bacteria in my gut. Red Cow Arcade.